Hi, folks at Movie Break. Here's Lida again, and I'm at Locarno, as you maybe know if you listen to the other interviews. And here's another one, this time with an Irish director. She's here with her second feature. It's again a horror movie, one that I liked a lot, and I'm sure it's gonna show in Germany sooner or later. It's called Frevaka, and I'm here with Aislinn Clark. Hi, Aislinn.
Hi, Lida.
So yeah, as I already said, it's your second movie. Your first one, The Devil's Doorway, already was a horror story in 2018, so you really seem to love that genre.
Yes, I do love horror. I mean, I love cinema in general, but I have a soft spot for horror. I don't know if I would always make horror films. I think it would be strange to categorize yourself as someone who only makes a certain kind of film. I think it depends on what the story is, what you're attracted to. Not everything that I'm working on is horror, but I tend to lean towards darkness. Let me say it like that. That's just where my kind of heart takes me with stories. But they're not necessarily always genre, but these first two have been. And I will do more, but I may also do other things.
It's interesting because both stories, especially also your first one, The Devil's Doorway, are based in real events. The Devil's Doorway deals with the story of the Magdalen laundries in Ireland. It's a very cruel story where young girls were basically imprisoned and exploited by the church for just not conforming to very strict social rules, and some were even murdered by the church. So this is kind of real horror. And also your second story, which has more of a supernatural vibe, leans strongly into actual real events, and that is a very conservative religious society. How did you approach that subject?
I think coming from being Irish and coming from that background, having lived a lot of my life in rural Ireland, it's kind of inescapable. The church and that kind of the hold that it has on society, it's a lot less now than it was historically, but the feeling is still there. It still infiltrates every element of life, and I think we're still living with the aftermath of all these really horrendous traumas. So the last Magdalen laundry closed in 1996, which is really not a long time ago at all. And I had my own son when I was 17 in 1997, the year after, and I was unmarried, all of that. So I could have very easily, if I'd been in a different family or situation had been different, I could have been in one of these places. So I've always felt that is a very present element, the control of the church, the kind of historical conservative pressure of the church on Irish society has affected particularly women. And for me, that is the primary story. For me, in how I see Ireland, it is the primary story that needs to be told. So it's kind of hard for me to, not if I'm writing a story about Ireland, making a film set in Ireland, it's hard for me to ignore that because it has such a weighty presence.
And it's also the literal story of your new movie, because both main characters are female. We have an old woman, Peg, who is taken care of by a palliative carer, Shu, who moves in with her in rural Ireland. And Peg very strongly fears and believes in the little people in the ancient myth of Ireland, which kind of merge into with Christian faith. And I found that very interesting, this idea that fundamentalist faith is interchangeable to a certain degree.
I think in Ireland, there are lots of countries that are heavily Catholic, but Ireland has its own, and as I'm sure it's the same everywhere else in their own way, but in Ireland, the Catholicism, it's not taken directly from the church, from Rome. It's been moulded into its own unique shape in Ireland, and it's been integrated with old myths, with superstitions, and turned into this sort of, it's neither one thing or the other. There's a lot of folk elements incorporated into how people actually practice Catholicism in Ireland. It's considered okay to have your own sort of twist on it, you know, which it might not be in other countries. There isn't a strict adherence to the fundamental faith as it comes from, you know, the church. So again, that's very natural. You know, we have things in Ireland like You would have healers who are the seventh son of a seventh son who are gifted with certain abilities, and they will use Catholic rituals when they're performing their, you know, if you've got shingles or something, they can fix it. But they'll use prayer, they'll evoke the Virgin Mary. So myth, superstition and religion, I think anyway, aren't they the same thing really? You know, aren't they the same thing? But in Ireland, they're very much all intertwined. So people will use Catholic icons to dissuade the Naishí, we call them, which is like the fairy folk, from doing harm to us. And the two things are just hand and glove. You can't really separate them. And I find that very interesting, the texture of that in Ireland, the idiosyncrasy of how we handle faith historically is fascinating, I think.
And how do you think will your movie be approached by also an Irish society which is still very strongly rooted in disbelief?
I think it's always kind of impossible and probably not a good idea to worry about how your film will be perceived, especially if I was to think about how people are going to react to the film. All it's going to do is stultify, you know, what I'm trying to say, and I think you just have to be honest and say it and hope for the best. So I think with my first film, The Devil's Doorway, it was very, very critical of the church, the kind of mechanism of the church-state apparatus and how it facilitated these terrible things to happen in plain view, and people knew about them. They weren't completely hidden all of the time. So I think it's you just have to tell the truth and then hope, have faith. Pardon the pun, but you have to have faith that people will understand it in the way that it's meant, and that those who interpret it in a more negative way, that's their prerogative, and there's nothing I can do about that. But I think I feel that Fraueka is going to find a home, particularly with Irish women. It's a very it's a woman's story. Almost all of the cast are women, and a lot of the team and the key creatives are women. And my interest was very much in that angle of telling women's stories. It's of our inherited trauma, specifically as women, which we have a whole lot of in Ireland, and is very distinct. And I wanted to explore that specifically rather than the more general.
And one of those traumas which already appeared in your first feature is a child which is taken away from the mother without her consent. And that was also something, even if it's not specifically in the first narrative, that happened a lot in Mogollón Laundries, that children that were born often out of wedlock were taken away from their mothers without the mothers often even knowing where the child went or what happened to the child, or sometimes thinking the child was dead. And here we hear that the child is apparently taken by the fairies. What does this element mean to you?
Yeah, I think for me in this film, I'm using the fairy folk as a kind of analogue for the real life traumas. So when Peg's child had been taken by the fairies, or it was promised to the fairies and they were going to take her, it is a reflection of that historical thing which happened. You know, so Peg got married because she was pregnant, she had to, you know. I think the fairy folk are, sorry, I'm going to catch myself a little bit. I lost my throat slightly. I need to cough. So the fairy folk in this film are a stand-in for all of the other terrible real life things to an extent, and the fairy land, the other world where Peg had been and where we eventually go at the end with Shu, is the location of all of the Irish trauma. So I'm giving it that fictional, supernatural analogue in order to explore it. But I think there are moments in the film where you understand that, where it's made clear. And Shu says to Peg, what is it like down there meaning the other world where the fairy folk live. And Peg lists off all of the Irish traumas, essentially a famine village. She talks about like mass emigration.
The potato blight.
She talks about coffin ship, the emigration, the huge loss of people we had in Ireland, Magdalen Laundries, all of the bodies that were found in the septic tank. So it's that is what I'm exploring. Yeah. And I think horror is so useful for doing that, for using a fictional overlay for some real life trauma.
Yeah, I think that this is actually one of the strongest scenes, because each of those reflects, as you said, like a real life trauma that you recognize, and it still works in a dramatic way very well. And that the movie is so resonant is also because of the great acting. And how did you find Claire Monolly, who plays Shu, the main character, for this role?
Claire is an absolutely incredible actor, really. Claire and Bridge both. And she had been in a film, another Irish language film I'd written, but I didn't direct, that was produced by one of the production companies that made Freyka. So that's how I originally encountered Claire. And then she just was the right person for Shu. I didn't really even look at anyone else, actually, for Shu. It was just, it was going to be Claire, and she completely inhabits that character in such a total way, you know. And I think the key thing for both actors was to understand, to play it as a drama, not to play it as a horror film, to go into the character, because neither of them had done horror films before. And we had that conversation at the beginning where they thought, am I going to need to do something different? But it's not. A horror film is just a drama film where some things happen that are not realistic necessarily, or that wouldn't happen in real life. And that's how they played it, fully committing to that. And they both have a lot of experience in theatre and in film also, of playing truthful characters, and that's what I want, and that's what both of them gave.
Yeah, there were two very intense performances. Also, the older actress, and I don't dare to pronounce her name because Irish names are very difficult to pronounce. You when I do it,
Breach Ninacton.
Ninacton. Yeah. So was this the same casting process with her? Because she's almost in a different way. She's just as intense as Claire is.
Breach was kind of a lucky find, actually, because originally we had another actress cast in that role, and because of a conflict with scheduling, she couldn't do it. So we had to find someone else, and Breach was such a gift, you know. I don't think we looked further outside of that. It was like, once we knew that she was available, and I spoke to her, and I thought, yes, we feel like we have a vibe on this, I can work with this person, and knowing her experience and everything, she was just a perfect fit, and totally committed to the role as well.
What also makes the horror very effective is that you use very little special effects. It's very restrained, so often you have the feeling that you don't really know if a scene is real or if it's already supernatural, and there's always this feeling like this could actually happen, and it's just like our mind that kind of connects the things in a way that we think, oh, it's something more than human. How did you make that decision? Like, is it generally that you don't like special effects so much, or that you can relate to this kind of spooky, uncanny horror more?
I think I do relate to that kind of horror more, but I also like practical effects. I like doing things in camera. I like I like special effects too. It's not that I have a problem with them necessarily, and I have, you know, use them, and I probably will again. But for this film in particular, it's kind of, I wanted to have this threshold between the real and the unreal, like to maintain this kind of tight line between the two, because I think there's a version of this film where it is just a kind of a spiral, a descent, like a folie à deux, where the two are get folded into each other's madness, essentially. And I think I wanted to maintain that aspect of it, the feeling of the worlds kind of bleeding together, rather than leaning too heavily into the supernatural. You know, there's still the plausible deniability that this could just be Shu's madness unraveling.
And how did you find those very impressive settings? Is it everywhere in Ireland like that? Did you just go there and it looks like a horror film setting? Or did you have to look for that and build that?
Well, actually, you know, I have to say, I might be biased, but I do think Ireland is, like, there's so much beauty everywhere in such a small country. The house that we shot in, the primary location, was found by one of the producers. And actually, the first time I visited it, I had this really strange feeling where I suddenly, it's kind of like deja vu. And I became more and more sure. I've been in this house before. And I spoke to the owner, and I worked out that I had actually been there before. I was at a party there when I was like 21. I'd completely forgotten it existed. So that was very strange. And it was the first house we looked at. And instantly it was like, this is just the right place. Nobody had ever shot in it before, which is very unusual in Ireland. A lot of shoots happen. A lot of people use old period homes for various films, TV shows. Nobody had ever used this place. It was untouched, kind of. And the family still live there. And it's so, we did bring in our own set design, and we didn't really build anything. We built the door, the important red door, but everything else is, that's that house, it's what it's like. It has so much weird texture. I mean, we did bring in, Nicola Moroni was our production designer, did an amazing job, and we wallpapered some rooms and stuff like that, but there was so much that was just there. The kitchen in particular, we barely touched. It was just, that's what it looks like. It's fantastic. It was amazing. Then the other locations were, for practical reasons, around that area. And the street where Shu has her final face-off with the boy at the end. And again, this is coincidental. We had a location manager who found the street, and it was about proximity to the house for logistical purposes. But my grandmother's childhood house is on that street. So there was this real sense of eerie kind of... like almost like the supernatural, like things were coming together, and so much so that it was commented on. It was very, very odd. But we were lucky with the area that we had, that there was so much in easy distance that was just very atmospheric or usable or beautiful. But as I say, Ireland is literally littered with places like that.
And this strong atmosphere which this movie has is also connected to the language, and it's actually the first horror feature film to be completely shot in Irish as main language. Was that a tough production decision? Because I could imagine that producers say, like, this limits our audience, do it just in English.
I think there are plenty of producers who would say that and who would be nervous about that, but from its very inception, this was always going to be an Irish language film. So the previous film that Claire had been in, that I had written but not directed, and it was one of the same production companies, and our national broadcaster for Irish language, TG Carr, they wanted to make films to send out into the world, rather than traditionally, historically, our Irish language productions have been very inward looking, and they wanted to make films that would travel. So it was always going to be one of their films for this purpose. That's how it was imagined from the very outset. That's why I wrote it the way it is. That's why it is for me such as, like, it's a very specifically Irish horror film. And I'm really glad that actually it's finding an audience outside of Ireland, that it's not, that it is travelling. I think that's because horror does travel. Horror is universal, and it does get out there and find an audience. But it wasn't going to be any other way, really. This film was always going to be in Irish.
And I think it certainly adds a lot to the atmosphere to hear the real language and get the feeling that's how people actually would speak, and it's not some dialogue that they are reciting, but that you have the idea that it's a real conversation. And it's also, and we also already talked about how much this is a female story, and what I'm noticing, and which delights me a lot as a horror fan and a woman, is that you see so much more horror movies made by directors who are female, and you see in subsequently more female-centered stories, because it's well known that female directors are more likely to tell stories where women play a significant part than male directors. And what do you think is it that kind of opens up doors, or also makes women literally push their way into the genre? Because as women, we know doors are not just opened, we always have to kick them in.
Yes. That's true. I think with the Babadook, obviously, when that came out, there was this big massive revolution, and people were very open to seeing stories from female horror directors, and that created so much opportunities for us. But it is still always going to be hard, and I think it's just, as you say, a case of being tenacious, insistent in telling your stories the way that you want to tell them. And we've proven at this point in the past 10 years that people want to see these stories, that they do sell and that they do find audiences. So I'm very glad that there was that kind of new understanding, and women have always loved horror, and I'm glad that we're finally allowed to make it.
And speaking of those stories, do you already have new stories in your mind that you want to direct and talk about now?
Yes, I'm working on a number of things. I have a project in development with Paramount that hopefully I'll be shooting next year. It's a witch story about a nanny that's also a witch. I didn't write it actually, but it's a wonderful script. And that's my hopefully next project. And then I've got other things bubbling because as a woman in this industry, you have to keep all the balls in the air all the time. But yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely gonna look out for that. I'm sure Frevaga is gonna be at the Fantasy Film Fest in 1 or 2 years, and it's probably gonna get a German start. We tell you about it at Movie Break. I say thank you to the director, Ashlyn Clark, for this great interview. And yeah, hope to see more from your story soon.
Thank you so much.